Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's going on, everybody? Zach Rosenblatt back here with Darryl Slater for the latest episode of the Talk Is Cheap podcast. The Giants are coming off a pretty brutal loss in many ways, 44-20, right? That was the final score?
Yep.
Against the Cowboys. They lost Daniel Jones to concussion. Unclear if he'll be able to play this week. Saquon Barkley to an ankle. He won't play. Kenny Golladay to a knee. He won't play. Rookie corner Rodarius Williams out for the year with a torn ACL. Andrew Thomas still didn't practice on Wednesday. He didn't play on Sunday. Just a lot of bad. There's a lot of bad to cover, but before we do get in the bad, I think I want to talk about something positive coming out of the game, because it was such an exciting game for, and I guess also negative in some ways, but for Kadarius Toney, I think we just have to talk about this kid, because he's all anybody's talking about this week already. He had 189 yards on 10 catches. He had a rush for like 7 yards. He would have probably gotten over 200 yards had he not been ejected with 6 minutes left. It was like the full Kadarius Toney experience to the extreme. I think he's probably better than any of us could have imagined. His talent, he's just a unique player. But like, what, when you walked out of that game, like, was both for the fight and this performance, like, Kadarius was like, beyond the injuries, was like the thing to think about, right?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, obviously this is a team that's 1-4 and has a lot of problems, but you look at some of the glimmers of hope that you see there, and he's one of those, and certainly surprising, because everyone thought, oh, it'll be a slow start to the season, and it kind of was.
Yeah.
He obviously wasn't ready to play, whether that was, you know, limited practice time or limited knowledge of the playbook, or those sort of things kind of go together. So for him to have such an enormous breakout game, certainly gives the Giants some hope, and he's a guy who can, for lack of a better term, go out and kind of wing it. I mean, Jason Garrett basically said that today. You know, it sounds like, you know, obviously he's not a masterful route runner. He may not totally know the playbook, which is fine, to be expected. But he can turn a 3-yard catch into a 20-yard gain, and that's stuff that you
can't teach. Yeah.
Can't teach. So he's got that sort of sandlot aspect to his game, and for a young receiver, that gives you a leg up, because, you know, you don't need knowledge or expertise or experience.
Just give it to the talented guy, yeah.
Totally. And that, it's a space-oriented game, like Jason Garrett was saying. So, look, the bottom line is, it's for him, this is the same stuff from day one. Like, there's so much of that potential and athleticism, and then also that, like, underlying nonsense. And
immaturity, yeah.
If he breaks his hand by punching DeMonte Kazee and however you say his name in the helmet, well, no one's talking about the good game he had. Everyone's
talking
about
he's out for weeks. Yeah.
Weeks, right? So he's not going to be suspended. He didn't get hurt.
He'll get a hefty fine. But
he skated on pretty much any significant consequence. That was a crazy moment. Like, he punched the guy in the head when the guy wasn't even looking.
it was a very strange scene. To go back to his skills, though, like, sometimes you never know when a guy has a breakout game, if it's like a fluke or whatever. But I think the way he got it is what has me convinced that like he is that good, because he does a lot of the work himself. It's not like he's being schemed open. Like the week before against the Saints, he had a great play where it was 3rd and 17. He caught the ball with like 2 yards past the line of scrimmage, and then he gained the rest of the yards running around defenders. Like the way he moves, they can line him up all over the field. I will say, like, I get the feeling that, like, I don't know. Maybe this is a weird way to say it, but it was almost a good thing that Sterling Shepard and Darius Slayton got hurt, because I get the sense that maybe they still wouldn't have given him as big of a workload as he's gotten these last 2 weeks if those guys weren't hurt. So it still would have
been a
slower process. Maybe he makes a big play here and there. It was almost a blessing in disguise, and now I am interested to see how they use him and Sterling, because they both have the, I mean, they can move them both on the outside. They can line up everywhere, but they are both primarily slot receivers. So they're the two best wide receivers. So you have to get them on the field. Like it's just going to be very interesting to see how they play that out. But yeah, the immaturity factor, I mean, that's been a thing since the moment he got here. You know, he had his whole cleat thing when he first arrived. He didn't show up for voluntary OTAs. There was the whole thing after week two, was it week two, right? Where he was complaining, he complained on social media and about his role. But yeah, it's just funny how much everything can change once like the production is there. But yeah, I mean, this guy has a really bright future. He needs to get his head on straight though. I think he responded well to it. Like the day after, when he spoke to the media, like there's even a question that was basically like, why do you feel like you need to apologize for throwing a punch? Like the reporter said, like, I thought you were in the right or something. Like the fact that he showed fight, like fans seemed to really rally behind that. But even Kadarius was like, no, I can't do something like that. You know, I want to be a good example for all my fans. And, you know, it's just something that you can't do. Like, this isn't, he had a great quote where he's like, this isn't hockey or boxing where you can just go and fight everybody.
Of course, yeah.
So at least it's good that he understands it. He grasps it. He wasn't pushing back on the punishment. He apologized on Twitter. Like, he seems like someone who's, like, willing to learn and grow and stuff like that. And it seems like coaches really do love him. His teammates are, like, in awe of him. And going in this week, actually, you know, I would keep an eye on. They did this once last week. They put him in at Wildcat quarterback. Especially if Daniel Jones doesn't play on Sunday, I would bet we see that more than once. This is a guy that played quarterback in high school. Mike Lennon said he saw him throw a 70-yard pass casually during warm-ups during the preseason. And Wildcat offense, like, was in vogue a while back. Then it slowly started failing, probably because a lot of the guys that were doing it, like, didn't have the ability to, like, read what was in front of them. I think Kadarius might. I'm just very intrigued to see if they actually capitalize on this guy's skill set or if once everybody's healthy, they revert back to just targeting Sterling Shepard and Evan Engram in the middle of the field or something.
Well, I mean, that's an interesting point. They were forced to give him opportunities,
yeah,
and he took advantage of those opportunities. So, like you said, if they weren't forced to give him opportunities, would they have ever given him those opportunities? You wonder. But now they're in this situation where they have this dynamic player, and you have a coordinator in Jason Garrett who has not have a reputation necessarily for being able to know how to use those type of guys. Now, let's see if he does, whether that's Wildcat quarterback, whether that's jet sweep type plays. How does he work Kadarius Toney into this offense to take advantage of his skill set? Because, look, I mean, it can't always just be, hey, dump off 3-yard pass and run 17 yards.
Yeah.
Eventually, a defense is going to be able to defend that. And, you know, look, this week they're going against, so no Kenny Golladay, obviously, this week. And looks like Slayton and Shepard could come back. But
Jalen Ramsey might follow Toney around, for all we know. Yeah.
Correct. This week they're going against Jalen Ramsey, one of the best, not only the best cornerbacks in the league, one of the best antagonists and pests in the league.
Yeah.
And DeMonte Kazee, like, let's be honest, it was like pushing and shoving. It's not like he spit in his face and he punched him.
Yeah.
He was pushing and shoving and then just standing there, and Kadarius Toney punched him in the helmet with him when he wasn't even looking. Like, dude, if that gets under your skin, what's Jalen Ramsey going to do? I mean, Jalen Ramsey's got to be licking his chops at this kid.
Sterling, it was interesting. Sterling Shepard even, like, pointed out, he's like, everybody in the league probably saw what Kadarius did.
Targeted
on
his back.
So they're gonna try and, you know, get him riled up.
Absolutely. Totally. I mean, that's about as basic of a mental game as you can play with a guy who's a young kid. And you know, that's his weakness right now, that he's young and inexperienced and a little bit immature. I mean, it's a rare situation where you find a guy who comes in the league who's got it all figured out mentally and is a dynamic player.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All these guys have to grow in one way or another. And his growth has to come in his head. Let's be honest. He's got to grow up. And so that's okay. That's fine. That's part of the process for a lot of these guys. And let's see if he does it. Obviously, you know, Sunday has got a big challenge, you know. You know, for this Giants team in many ways with the Rams, but certainly in a micro way with the Toney Ramsey matchup, which I think should be pretty fascinating to watch.
And so I guess the next thing we should talk about is who's going to be throwing the ball to Kadarius Toney. So Daniel Jones is in the concussion protocol right now. He had a scary moment. Anyone who was listening to this saw what happened. But it seems like he's progressing through the protocol a little quicker than I expected. He was at practice doing some, like, football-related activities, so I think he's in, like, step 3 of the protocol out of 4 steps. Doesn't necessarily mean he'll be ready for Sunday. If he does, though, where do you stand on the idea that, even if he's clear before Sunday, that shouldn't they just rest him out of an abundance of caution? Like, Andrew Thomas still might not play behind that offensive line. Aaron Donald, I know you can't play scared. Once a guy's cleared, he's cleared. But, like, I don't know. I feel like they're probably going to lose this game anyway. I know they're not thinking like that. But I would say live to fight another week, right?
Well, I sort of, with that, with the way the concussion protocol is now, I mean, he has to be cleared by an independent neurologist. So yeah. There's a baseline level of cleared is cleared when it comes to a concussion. The thing about the murkier one for me would be like a sprained ankle, because the team is the one clearing him then. And the sprained ankle is
So they have their own agenda.
Right, so there's a spectrum of mobility with a sprained ankle. If he's cleared, he's cleared. Then it becomes like, okay, do you want to...
I guess then how you call the game or whatever.
Well, do you want to put him out there with no practice time? And and Joe Judge didn't rule it out. Ultimately, I don't think he plays on Sunday.
Yeah.
And maybe the decision...
Unless he practices... We're recording this on Thursday. If he practices today, maybe.
Technically yesterday...
Because Friday would be a light practice. So.
Yeah, technically yesterday he did not participate. I think if he's limited today, that means he's very close to being cleared, I guess, is my layman's understanding of the protocol. Look, I think the question becomes like, do you want to play him with no practice action, even if he's cleared by the protocol? He's played a lot of games, so I guess he could probably go out there. Would he be a step slow if he didn't practice this week? I think that's a fair question. And like you said, without your left tackle, then are you putting him in harm's way of getting hurt again, whether that's a head injury or some other kind of injury, just because he's a step slow reaction-wise, and not even from the concussion, just a step slow reaction-wise from having no practice reps. So, like, I think this is a situation where the protocol might make the decision for the Giants, ultimately.
I agree.
I think if he's cleared, I think he will play. Yeah. I think he's going to play if he's cleared. Because, like I said, it's not a gray area. It's no longer a gray area thing because of the protocol.
Yeah, that's a good point I didn't think about. Look at you, making a good point. All right.
Once every few weeks.
You know, it's interesting. Looking at this game and coming out of the first 5 weeks, so they're 1-4. Like, I know, like, half their offense is injured, but the offense, even with all the injured guys, is still not my biggest concern about this team. The defense, I think, which is almost completely healthy if you exclude Blake Martinez and, you know, Rodarius Williams, who wasn't playing that huge of a role anyway.
Peppers,
and he'll be back this week, I think. This defense has just been a disaster, like, to put it kindly. and it's interesting, you know, today we spoke with Patrick Graham, and in the first 5 weeks he was frustrating fan base, media, everybody, because he refused to talk about the previous game when they had struggled almost every week. And this was their worst performance. When was the last time they gave up more than 500 yards? You asked it when you asked him.
It was 2015, I think they gave up 608. So I think they may have given up like a 501.
Oh, okay. But not as much as they gave up
515 on Sunday, which was the most.
So 6 years since he last had this bad of a performance. Patrick Graham was good about it. He was fired up. He was saying how it's unacceptable. He was saying how his best players need to play better, which is like more than he's not critical about his guys. And that's the reality. I think you can blame scheme all you want, but the reality is if the players aren't playing at the level they're supposed to, this defense, like, James Bradbury has been awful. Leonard Williams has not made an impact. Dexter Lawrence has not made an impact. Logan Ryan and Xavier McKinney have both not made plays. So those are like maybe your five most important guys on the defense, because Blake Martinez is out. Their edge rushers has just been an absolute disaster. Carl Banks, who was one of the best outside linebackers in team history, just like went in on them on his podcast about how, especially on their tackling, not even on their pass rushing, but, you know, Lorenzo Carter and O'Shane Zimenez have no sacks this year. They haven't helped at all. Aziz Ojulari hasn't had a sack since week 3. Like, it's just, the pass rush is bad, the tackling's bad, the run defense especially, that's the most embarrassing part, because this defensive line's supposed to be good. Like, where's your biggest concern in terms of this defense? Is it just the overall, like, the good guys not playing good or well?
Yeah. I should say. I mean, it's hard to pinpoint one particular problem because they have so many of them. And Patrick Graham, you know, was, like you said, it was frustrating to fans and media because he was going into the, oh, I don't want to look back mode, because he only talks once a week on Thursday. Yeah. So I only want to look ahead. Well, he knew, I think, that he wasn't going to be able to get away with that after that you know, garbage performance in Dallas. And, you know, he came out today and said straight up that was unacceptable what they put out there. And like, I think finally fans will say, okay, like, obviously the guy feels that way, but I think it's good for fans to hear that, you know, him articulate that. Now, it would be even better if they actually performed well. Like, thing, you know, I don't think any fan looks at it as a win that the coordinator comes out and rips himself.
Says something that we know that they're bad. Everybody knows it.
I mean, I guess it's a maybe a step. I don't know. How much will him saying that actually
help? I'm sure behind closed doors, he's surely criticizing his guys about not tackling well. Yeah,
I'm sure he's destroying them. And look, this is a guy who had a big reputation coming out of the last year. Future head coach, all that good stuff. This keeps up. He's not getting any sniffs next offseason. Zero. Sure he's not thinking
about. If he hadn't built up so much goodwill from last year, we'd be talking about him being on the hot seat right now.
100%. I mean, last year he did a really good job with an undermanned defense. Not a lot of talent. Everyone looked at this and said, okay, cool. Your defense should be better, unquestionably a top 10 defense this year because you have better players.
It's at least the same personnel, if not better personnel, on paper. And it looks worse. Yeah.
And guess what? They have to go play a Rams offense this week.
Which is really good.
That has a chance to absolutely light them up.
I think Pro Football Focus, because I did something on the edge rusher struggling so much. I think Pro Football Focus has them with the best pass blocking offensive line and the 10th best run blocking offensive line.
You're talking about the Rams.
Yeah. They're not the Giants for sure.
and the Giants in pass rush are way low.
Yeah. I think they're 27th or something like that. Yeah. So it's not an ideal matchup. And then on top of that, you're not going to have an offense for the Giants that's going to be helping you scoring-wise. So the defense needs to have an out-of-body. They need to play like they did against the Seahawks last year, if you remember that game. They had Colt McCoy playing. Nobody thought they were going to win that game. They did. It's just, I don't know. I don't even know what they can do. They just need James Bradbury to play better. They need Leonard Williams to play better. Who of their top guys have you been the most disappointed in, would you say? Is Leonard Williams your number one guy?
I mean, Leonard Williams.
Even Patrick Graham was pretty honest about him not playing up to how well he should today, 100%. Too, which is pretty surprising.
This is what everyone worried about. Was last year a fluke? And right now, I mean, it's only been 5 games, but at what point do you say it's only been X number of games? I mean, at some point, it's not only number of games. This is a problem that this guy, again, is reverting to not being able to finish as a pass rusher. You look at the PFF stuff, and he's been pretty good, I think, against the run.
Well, he's back to what he was before. He's a good run stopper who gets pressures but doesn't bring the quarterback
down. And is not worth the money that they gave him.
That's not a $17 million a year player or whatever.
To be fair, nothing happens in a vacuum, and so Dalvin Tomlinson is gone, of course, and he's getting zero help from edge rushers who have never been good.
Yeah,
Lorenzo Carter and Zemanis have never been good. They are terrible draft picks.
It's always been a hope that they become better, there's been no evidence that they were going to do that.
That's why they drafted Ojulari. I mean, how many swings are they going to give Dave Gettleman at getting a competent edge rusher?
That's the funny thing. The funny thing is they really haven't invested assets in getting edge rushers that are good. If you
draft
think about
picks.
It. But not first round. They've never used a first round pick on an edge rusher in a long time, where a lot of good teams do that.
Yeah, but Ojulari was high in the
second. I know. My point being, they haven't spent money on edge rushers at free agency. They tried signing Leonard Floyd, and he's returned to the Rams. But they've relied on these guys that are unproven, and especially whether it's Ojulari or the other guys you mentioned, or they try and get a guy in free agency for cheap, like Kyler Fackrell last year, Afadio Denigbo this year, who they cut. They really haven't taken big enough swings, I would say. They haven't brought in any. They need to bring in Marcus Golden was one of their best signings they've had in a long time. He got 10 sacks in that crappy 2019 year. That pass rush was maybe worse than this one, but Golden was getting the sacks. And then last year they brought Golden back, and then you didn't use him, so you traded him away. They could really use a guy like Marcus Golden in the room right now.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that. It's one of those things where last year, if you look at their pass rush, other than Leonard Williams, it was pretty non-existent. Yep.
I think the second place was Kyler Fackrell with four sacks.
Yeah, in terms of the production, he was their most productive guy. Now Dexter Lawrence got some push, but you're talking about guys who work on the outside of the line and on the edge that you need to have more there. I mean, you look at the best teams or the best defenses, at least that's one of the most important positions in the NFL, an edge rusher. And the Giants just have taken some swings, like you said, in the draft, not in the first round, and decided to not spend money on it in terms of bringing in free agents. And they're they're not getting the results. I mean, obviously, you'd love to. The ideal situation is draft a guy in the third round, have him become really good, because
cheap. Really good guy at a premium position on a cheap contract.
But that's
part of the problem. They've been trying to do that, but they've failed at drafting the right guys. So you're not getting that benefit. So now Lorenzo Carter's in his contract year, and he has 8.5 sacks for his career or whatever.
The knock on him was he couldn't stay healthy, and now that he's healthy, he's not doing squat.
And he's always been a training camp hype guy because he looks good in training camp because he's a big athletic guy, and then he gets the games and he doesn't do anything.
It's a problem. I mean, obviously, one of those many things where I mean, how many years are we going to sit around here and say, like, oh, well, maybe this is the year for this Dave Gettleman draft pick. Maybe maybe this insert year here is the year for insert name here who was drafted by Dave Gettleman. Like, I mean, how many? There's like a dozen of those guys, or has been, who have either fizzled out or in the process of fizzling out. And, you know, that's what happens. I mean, that's how you're 1-4 one of the many ways.
So, spinning it forward, not even just to the game. So, this trade deadline's in a couple weeks, I believe. Like, at what point do you think they should start selling off guys that they're not going to keep long-term? And the hard part is, as we've talked about, like, do you want Dave Gettleman making those moves?
Yeah, that's, I mean, some of it, too, is, remember, Joe Judge obviously has a lot of say. I don't have to remind you of that, but just people listening, you know.
It's like everybody wants them to trade Evan Engram. I think at this point it's almost too late to trade him.
What are you going
to
get for
him? I don't know what you're getting for that
bag
guy.
Of balls?
Sixth-round pick? Like, is that even worth it at that point? Like,
right, exactly. You know, I think
maybe you just wait and get a compensatory pick because somebody will sign him, you know?
That's the balance there. Yeah. Because the Giants have so little cap space next offseason that they're, you know, say they lose Evan Engram and Lorenzo Carter and even maybe Peppers.
Yeah.
Right? Those guys go out. Those are your free agents.
Will Hernandez,
too. Right? Yeah, exactly. You have a chance to get maybe like a compensatory pick when you pool all those guys together, because they're probably not going to
They're not going to be signing any like notable guys.
So that's the equation that I think people need to remember is would you rather have a certain number, certain pick now for a seventh round pick for Evan Engram, or just wait it out?
Yeah, for it to be worth it now.
Pull him in.
Yeah, what's worth it trading Jabril Peppers now? Like, is it really worth it if you're only getting a fifth round pick for him? Or, you know, he seems like a guy that might sign a deal that maybe gets you a fifth. I don't know. It just depends.
It's so hard to figure.
Plus, like, what's his value right now? The guy is either hurt or he hasn't played well.
That's like the other thing. Like,
if you want to trade a guy with value, then you're making your team worse, and I don't know if Joe Judge is going to want to do that.
I mean, in order to trade a player, you have to have a team that says, I will give you something for this player.
It would have made sense to trade Sterling Shepard this year, and then they restructured his contract, especially now that you know that Kadarius Toney's legit.
I mean, we all talked about going into the year that that Toney could take Shepard's role, maybe. I mean, at least at the draft, we talked about that, right? And Joe Judge even called Shepard
to let him know, yeah.
Yeah, so, like, what's that tell you? And then we think, okay, maybe he's not going to take his role, but maybe they'll cut Shepard because
in the offseason
it would free up some cap space. But what do? They restructure
his deal. Yeah, so now it doubles his dead cap hit.
Right, and not only that, but it also, I'd have to look. I mean, even if you trade him, then you're still having to eat some cap because you converted salary to a bonus.
Well, and that's also with Engram and Peppers, they don't even save any cap if they trade them, by the way, because their contracts became guaranteed this year after a certain date. So they both are making $6 million this year, no matter what, and then you just have a dead cap hit on your charge.
I guess the only thing is you would take the minor amount of the half of the year and be able to roll it into next year.
That's true. So I guess that would be the benefit of doing it now.
The new team would take a salary. The Giants could minus that and roll it to next year, and I guess they could use all the cap hit they can get. But I think, to me, you look at it more, the draft pick is more valuable, and so I think maybe you tend to like we were just talking about earlier, loop all those guys in together next year, try to get a comp pick, so who makes the decision, right?
And people have made this point because everybody's always talking about they have those two first round picks, but it's great to have a lot of picks, but are you confident in your front office's ability to use those picks to the best of your ability?
Exactly.
The last couple of years they haven't really shown that, obviously. So before we go, what do you think happens on Sunday? I mean, a lot of it depends on if Daniel Jones plays, obviously. Either way, I just don't think they match up very well with the Rams. I think my prediction was 37-17 or something like that. I just see a blowout. It's tough. They're celebrating the 2011 team at halftime. I don't think they scheduled these things very well with the celebrations. I think Michael Strahan is going to be against the Eagles late in the season, which is going to mean it's going to be more Eagles fans in the stadium. That's always what happens when the Giants are out of the playoffs. But how do you see Sunday going?
Yeah, no, I think I don't think the Giants will score 17 points if Mike Lennon's the quarterback with no Saquon Barkley, no Kenny Golladay. I mean, I get that Kadarius Toney played well, but if you don't have those other guys to worry about, you can scheme against Kadarius Toney.
Yeah, now there's tape on him, yeah.
And so I think I'll go Rams 28, Giants 13, and this is just a tough one because, you know, we always think about, what do you write out of this game, right? So if they lose that game by 15 points...
It's one of those where it's almost hard to blame them for...
What do you expect?
Yeah. I mean, it's a win in air quotes if they keep it close, I would say.
Right. And I think at this point...
And it'll show that they have some fight in them, that they're able to keep it close against a Super Bowl contender, that kind of thing.
At this point in the year, if they're 1-5, and in a division that is not going to be won with, you know, an incompetent first-place team like last year...
Yeah, the Cowboys,
I think we all have to start looking at this and say, like, it looks like Dave Gettleman's going to be fired, but then, you know, obviously the team's going to exist next year, so you look forward and say, like, okay, what are the signs of progress? And now the big one, unfortunately for the Giants, we talked about this on Sunday, Daniel Jones' concussion, like, cloud, no pun intended, clouds everything, because they need to get some definitive answers on this kid this year, right? So if he misses a big chunk of games, do you come out of it?
So are you really basing it on two games that he was really good in, or are you going to base it on the whole... you know, evidence, which is that he wasn't good before
that. I mean,
you're
going to look at Tony and say hope for the future, but they're obviously not going to cut Tony. So So it's not like they need to make a decision.
I mean, but the rest of the season does become just evaluation.
Evaluation. Yeah. That's the word I was looking for. Yeah. So you want to evaluate Jones, and how do you evaluate him if he's not playing? It looks like this isn't going to be a long-term concussion thing based on the fact that we did see him out there doing some stuff in practice yesterday.
And so before we go, I will say there's apparently Joe Judge on his call with Rams media said that Jones is on the next step of protocol. He's going to participate in non-contact practice today. So,
okay, that's a good sign, and we'll get a chance to talk to Joe Judge briefly before practice here, which we should probably get going and do.
Yeah. All right. So we'll let you guys go. We'll end it on that good news. Check back next week for another episode, and thanks for listening.